look up, if you'd be kind enough, Luke 13, verse 10, we'll start with. Just hold on just a second there. All right. Jesus has left Galilee, and He's coming into Jerusalem, and He will stay now in Jerusalem until He goes through the crucifixion and resurrection. This also, tonight, is the last time we find Him doing any preaching in the synagogue. And this is on the Sabbath day. He must have been doing some teaching. Must have been kind of the main speaker. And so if you'll start with verse 10.
And He was teaching in one of the synagogues on the Sabbath, and there was a woman who for 18 years had had a sickness caused by a spirit, and she was bent double and could not straighten up at all.
Okay, what do you all have for spirit? Anybody have anything?
Had severe curvature of the spine and couldn't even straighten up.
Okay, must be a clear word.
Evil spirit.
Evil spirit, okay.
We got spirit of infirmity.
Okay, all right.
It also said in addition she was harassed by a demon.
Okay. All right, so here's a lady that has a bad back. She's kind of doubled over, can't straighten up. And of course, what did the Jews allude to that if you had very poor health, what was wrong with you? That's right, you were a sinner. So, however, on this one, Luke is pretty explicit on talking about that she had an evil spirit. And we'll even see some words that Jesus says. So she's been sick for 18 years. She's there in the synagogue. Don't know how she got there, but she's there. Okay, continue.
When Jesus saw her, He called her over and said to her, "Woman, you are free from your sickness."
Okay. Why her? Do you think that she's the only sick person there in the congregation? Okay, so this particular Sabbath was bent over day.
Well, you notice somebody like that, and she's been like that for 18 years.
Okay.
One of the versions says that that He called her because she was bent over and could no wise lift herself up.
Okay. Anybody else?
Was it because of the evil spirit that did it to her?
There was something. I can't believe she was the only sick person there. But remember, in lots of instances, especially remember when Jesus was going through the congregation or the crowd, and that woman that had an issue of blood touched His robe and He stopped. We're told in that particular crowd that there were lots of people who could have been healed, but they weren't because they had no faith to be healed. And she was the only one. So in this particular instance, I don't know if she had great faith, if she was troubled by the evil spirit, if she was... don't know. It's just interesting, out of all of them, He picked her. Okay, continue.
And He laid His hands on her, and immediately she was made erect again and began glorifying God.
Okay. The synagogue. Why, hold on. Why did He lay His hands on her?
Well, maybe His purpose was to draw attention to the fact that He was sending her out.
Okay, could be. What other reasons do you think He laid His hands on her?
Well, to clarify that, assuming that health meant sinner, He was associating with a sinner by touching her.
Okay, I think that's close.
If they thought she was a sinner, she probably hadn't been... had people touch her very much because they were afraid it would rub off on them.
Okay. Well, that's just the way Jesus is. He touched most everybody he healed. To some, a leper was the only time they've ever been touched in their life. He touched people. It's a personal. He could have said to her, "Lady, be healed," and that could have been it. But he made it very personal. He touched her. He did that on purpose.
And he called out to her too.
Yes. It's a one-on-one relationship. Now, you can imagine everybody's happy, correct? Read on.
But the synagogue official, indignant because Jesus had healed on the Sabbath, began saying to the crowd in response, "There are 6 days in which work should be done, so to come during them and get healed, but not on the Sabbath day."
All right, let's stop there. What's kind of interesting on who he chose to speak to? Yeah, don't you think most people would have spoke to Jesus himself directly? But there was something about it he didn't want to do that.
He was trying to influence the audience. Yeah.
Now this is kind of the head pastor, the head rabbi, the head person, whatever name you want to give him. And he addresses the crowd. And what does he say in layman's term? Yeah. Don't you have 6 days that you could have healed this woman? Why in the world did you pick today? So a fair question is, since I only ask fair questions, why did he pick that day? I thought we were supposed to stay away from controversy.
Good to do good on the Sabbath.
Okay. What other reasons?
Well, the Jews had so polluted what they were to do on Sabbath that Christ tried to show by his example what Sabbath was really supposed to be like.
Okay. We're going to discuss that in a minute. Okay. Why would they consider this work?
It's certainly no more work than teaching.
In their view, just about anything was work.
Huh? What do you think of their thinking?
Think of what?
What do you think of their thinking? What was more important to them?
The rules and regulations.
Rules and regulations.
Also their property.
Their what?
Their property. That's coming up too.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. More interested in the keeping of the Sabbath than they were the goodness or welfare of a human being.
Ritual.
Absolutely.
So they were just thinking about themselves. They looked good by it.
Absolutely. That's right. This is the holy day, and God forbid if we can do anything not to keep it holy. What does Jesus say?
But the Lord answered him and said, "You hypocrites, does not..."
Let's stop there. Hello. I thought Jesus was kind of nice, meek.
Well, he was always speaking the truth.
Only to the hypocrite.
Nice and meek wasn't working.
Unless it involved the church. He was very abrupt and direct to the people that were the church, the spiritual leaders.
They were in charge of the church.
Okay. So does that make them more responsible?
It certainly does.
Pardon?
I would say so. They're the ones that are leading. More people would be more up to listen to them than they would to be to someone that's...
Imagine the crowd that was there when he's saying this. I mean, you hypocrites, the crowd's going, "He just called them hypocrites." These are people we have to go buy doves for to make our offerings, buy sheep for to do this. He just called them hypocrites.
Mm-hmm.
That should have gotten the crowd's attention. Well, but when he came in to talk, he didn't speak directly to Jesus. He talked to all of the people there to make himself look good and him and Jesus look bad.
Yep. Okay. If you, as you go through the gospel, you'll find when he talked to the scribes, Pharisees, and the religious people, he said some harsh things. Hypocrite's pretty nice, considered that you're a generation of vipers. You're a snake. But that's the only thing he could do with these people. All right, read on. You hypocrites!
Does not each of you on the Sabbath untie his ox or his donkey from the stall and lead him away to water him? And this woman, a daughter of Abraham as she is, whom Satan has bound for 18 long years, should she not have been released from this bond on the Sabbath day?
Okay, now, obviously, if the ox was in the ditch, what would they do? Pull that one out. If the donkeys needed food or water, what would they do? Okay. So he certainly makes this parallel outside of PETA. Which is more important? Animals or human beings? What did the Jews think? That was his point he's trying to make. Now, why did he throw in daughter of Abraham?
Because they were supposed to respect Abraham.
Okay. So he's saying, number one, she's not an animal. She's a human being. Why did he throw in daughter of Abraham?
Not a Samaritan, she's not a Gentile.
Exactly right. Not a Gentile, not a heathen, not a foreigner, not a Samaritan. She's what? A Jew. So he's saying, how can you self-righteous Jews get mad because I took care of a woman who's not an animal, but a human being, not a Gentile, but a Jew? So he's conversing with them on their own level. Read on.
As he said this, his opponents were being humiliated, and the entire crowd was rejoicing over all the glorious things being done by him.
Okay. Who's embarrassed?
Ruler.
Why?
Because Jesus made it perfectly clear that his thoughts were only about himself.
Do you think there was other healing going on? Because it says that there were glorious things that were being done.
Could have been, don't know.
Here it says, by the time he finished speaking, even those who hated him were ashamed of their attitude.
Okay. How effective was this?
And soon the congregation was praising God for what Jesus had done.
How effective do you think this was?
For the audience, it was very effective.
For the woman,
pardon?
For the woman, it was very effective.
Absolutely. By the way, it says that she was praising God. That uses the tense that says she was continually keeping on praising God. So if you'd been bent over and infirm for 18 years and you were healed, what would you be doing? And that's exactly what she was doing. So I want you to picture, here's a woman, they must have all known her, or you know, knew who she was, and she's praising God, jumping up and down, the crowd's looking, and here's the religious leaders of the church saying, how can you do this on this day? Doesn't make sense, does it?
What do you think Jesus said that Satan kept her bound for 18 years and that the spirit...
Okay. Good question.
That's what I was going to bring up, because this is, Luke was a physician, and he's emphasizing that this disease is caused by Satan.
But okay. All disease is caused by Satan. I mean, that's why, because he is in this world, is why we get diseases.
It's because of the devil.
Most of the time it doesn't, in his healings, most of the time it doesn't do that. And it also, a lot of times, tries to dispel that somebody is sick or hurt because they are sinners.
It's not because of the person's a sinner, but it's because there's sin all around us.
Okay.
We have a group within our church who thinks it's lifestyle that causes our disease, that we've got to use our diet.
But this is a lot different than most of the healings.
So how would you interpret it? It's mentioned twice, so it certainly is important. So how would you interpret it?
Well, because of the original sin, disease entered the world.
Okay. That's a nice answer, but it doesn't answer a thing.
Well, I guess just goes to show you that Satan is at work in different ways. I mean, you see the people coming up to him that are possessed, like the ones that are in the tombs, and they were screeching and hurting themselves. Mm-hmm. But the devil is killing us other ways as well.
Okay.
Most of the time, he's trying to dispel this feeling that everybody is sick because they are sinners. So this time, it's a totally different approach than what he normally has.
Okay.
Well, many people who get sick become discouraged about God because they think somehow God's not watching out for them. So you can see how the devil tries to get us in different ways.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And illness is certainly a good way to get you.
Okay.
In some of the translations, it called it arthritis, but in others it said it was a spirit. But it seems like if it was a spirit, he would have said, come out of you instead of you are freed from your sickness.
Very good observation. What else?
This, it doesn't say that. She's sick because she's a sinner. It says her sickness is caused by a spirit, an evil spirit.
Okay. Who else? In this situation, what do you think is the one most important thing that Jesus is trying to get across? Let me go out a different way. In a sales presentation, you have one and only one objective, and that's to have the customer buy what you're selling. Nothing else matters. So, there are no side arguments or side roads to take in a presentation. Now, in this particular situation, outside of bringing relief to the woman, I believe that was the motivation. I think he was touched, compassion, there was something about that woman that made things different from other people. But why, what was he trying to prove in this situation? Or illustrate or show?
It's better to do good on the Sabbath.
Yes. Yes.
And that mercy supersedes all.
Yes. So, if you're going to have a discussion or an exchange of ideas or a debate as going on here, what is one of the best ways to debate or make a presentation to somebody?
Well,
No, I'm talking about strategy-wise. Is to put it in language, their own language. So, I think this gives us two options. Option number one, which I believe does happen in lots of cases, perhaps the mind was affected, and perhaps for 18 years, because of mental or problems, she had willed herself into this situation and not got out of it. I believe that happens. I mean, we have enough physical evidence that this actually takes place. I stayed with Norman Truett, and his dad was a doctor up in Petersburg outside of Lubbock one time when I was selling books. And every Sabbath morning, the mayor of the town would come and he would have tremendous headaches. His headaches were just pounding. And he would get a shot. And this had been going on for about 3-4 years. And guess what the shot was? Yeah. Saline solution. And when he didn't get his shot, guess what happened to him? Sick, tremendous headaches, couldn't function. So there is something to this. The other option was Jesus was using their theology to make his point on what is right to do on Sabbath and to show mercy over legalism. So you don't, in a sales presentation, take what you want and argue against them. You take what they want and bring it into perspective in their language. So this was not the place to argue if sin was caused by Satan or whatever. This was a place to say, can't you see a dumb ox certainly is to be taken care of, but man, if a dumb ox is to be taken care of, how about a daughter of Abraham?
Didn't it kind of reveal him as creator a little bit?
Does a lot of things if you're looking.
I mean, they couldn't do it. They just
I don't think the religious leaders got any of this. I don't think it affected them. I think hopefully in the congregation, a lot of people, even though they were rejoicing at the time, we can go through all the Gospels and see where they rejoice, and forgot who he was. So we don't know, nor should we ever judge. And we don't know if the crucifixion and the resurrection, maybe a lot of this came back to some of these people. You remember the 5,000 he fed? They wanted to make him king. And then they get mad at him. So, you know, lots of this. What do we do with this Sabbath-keeping thing? If this lesson is on Sabbath-keeping, which I think this particular healing was done on the Sabbath, Jesus did quite a few things on the Sabbath. He went harvesting. He healed a blind man on the Sabbath. He healed the guy at the pool of Bethsaida. So what do we do with this Sabbath keeping?
He hiked from place to place.
Pardon?
He hiked from place to place.
Well. So what lessons do you get out of this? Okay, well, that's a good statement, and I believe that, but what does it mean?
What does it mean?
Yeah.
May I bring up any controversy here?
Oh, I don't like controversy. But try.
The text that I read in reference to our Sabbath school lesson this week, this is Numbers 15:32. It says, while the Israelites were in the desert, a man was found gathering wood on the Sabbath. Those who found him gathering wood brought him to Moses and Aaron, and the whole assembly, and they kept him in custody because it was not clear what they should do to him. Then the Lord said to Moses, "The man must die. The whole assembly must stone him outside the camp." So the assembly took him outside the camp and stoned him to death, as the Lord had commanded Moses. It's like two totally different ways to handle the Sabbath.
What do you do with that text?
Well, number one, he told them not to.
I told our five-year-old great-grandson not to go over there and do something, but I don't remember throwing rocks at him when he did. What do we do with this text? I'm teaching tomorrow, and I was not going to touch on that tomorrow because.
If we're going to go out and get sticks for a fight on the Sabbath, we better do it when nobody's looking.
Okay. So, what do you think?
Well,
first of all, it sure was good of God to include that story.
One thing you could say is, woman is a human being, which God loves human beings, and so that story has got a different purpose. Except you come down to comparing doing good on Sabbath versus picking up sticks and being killed for it.
Okay.
Were they told that the sticks were to be picked up before Sabbath, I wonder?
Yeah, but I just didn't throw the little kid in the swimming pool.
And because they must have had fires on Sabbath, lit okay. fires.
Okay. By the way, that fires is one of them. Huh? What's the answer? Comfortable with that story?
No, I'm not. I never.
There's lots of stories in the Old Testament I'm comfortable with.
Who all used to teach cradle roll? Anybody? Did y'all use this in your flannel graph stories? Who wants to throw the stones at the little man today? I do, teacher, I do.
Well, my son thinks Moses was bloodthirsty. That's what he says. But the Bible says he was humble, so I don't know.
All right, who wants to give the answer?
Charles, what's your interpretation?
There you go, Peggy. That's a great way to handle that.
I ask questions, and some of them are fair questions.
But you have a perception.
Well, it was selfishness for one thing.
Pardon?
It was selfishness for one thing.
What was the selfishness?
His family
he wanted the sticks to make the bread, I guess.
Well, what's selfish about that if you're feeding your children?
They didn't need food because they had manna.
It says it was a presumptuous sin.
What does that mean? I like all these words. What does that mean?
Sin with a high hand, as the original phrase in Numbers 15:30. It's avowedly confronting God's authority and to set up their own lust in competition with it. That's sin for sinning's sake, in contradiction to the precept of the law and defiance of the penalty even, the fight against God.
Who's given you
what we don't. We don't know what his intent was. We can't read his part. It might have been a rebel saying, "I don't care what God says about Sabbath. I'm going to pick up some sticks anyway."
Well,
we don't know
it's
that.
Still contradictory when he gives you the commandments, "Do not kill," and then he tells a slew of people to go out and stone somebody.
Well, the commandment was, "Do not murder."
I don't see the difference. The man's dead, just the same.
For anyone who sins openly and defiantly, whether he is an Israelite or a foreigner, is guilty of showing public contempt for the Lord and is to be put to death.
It'd be harsh in our world today. That sounds more like an Islam-based command.
It was all about the rules and regulations. There were people that were lost.
Pardon?
There were people that were lost and were slaves, and he said, "This is what you got to do right now. Do this. If you let one person slide, the whole group's going to slide." He's saying, "This is what I want you to do. You break the rule, this is it.
You're getting close.
I didn't say you break the rule and I may spank you. No, you're going to get your butt beat. You break the rule. Not maybe.
Getting close.
If he didn't spank me, then my brothers were going to break the rule. Because no, he didn't get whipped.
So they were in a learning curve.
Well, presumptuous sin, it says here, is people who think themselves too great, too good, and too wise to be ruled by God.
He must have been picking up the sticks in defiance.
It must have been, yeah, because he had to be more than go out picking up a couple of sticks, I would think.
What's your answer?
I haven't. Have to look at the context of Numbers 15. The people had been in open rebellion and had gone up and tried to conquer Canaan after, we're going to go through this in tomorrow morning in Sabbath school class because our lesson's on Numbers 15. They had gone up after they refused to go with the two spies saying, we can take them. The ten don't. God had come and said, we're going to have to wander around a little bit more. And then they got defiant and said, well, just a minute, we've messed up. So now we think we can take Canaan. They did not ask for guidance, did not ask for the blessings of Moses or for prayer. They just charge up and they just get wiped out. So they come back, and God comes in and says to them, as one would little children, this is what you need to do. This particular person was part of the group that was from Egypt that's called the mixed multitude or whatever, and he openly defied in front of Israel, that he was going to go out and gather firewood and make his own fire. Where did the heat come from for the children of Israel? From God. So there's two things here. Number one, openly defying to say that I don't trust God. Going to build my own fire. And secondly, openly defying and going out and saying, watch this. Or, put it in other words, I'm going to do it my own way. I don't believe God was very comfortable in what he told Moses to do. However, in certain circumstances, there are people of influence that if you allow them to do what they do, it affects many other people.
But Arnie?
Just let me finish. When you're presented with directions from God directly and openly choose to go against and understand the choice that you're making is definitely against God, then you're not a whole lot different than what Lucifer did in heaven. And so in this particular case, what would seem to be very cruel was done for the benefit of those who were alive. God looked and saw that this man was not movable in his decision that he had made for eternity. God is not interested as much, please understand this statement, as the first death. The first death in this world, unless he comes, is going to get us all. Some by old age, some by cancer, some by a speeding car, some whatever. What God has worked for and has always worked for is keeping us from that second death, which is eternal destruction or the reward of eternal life with him. These were children. Look at all the things he had done for them. And this man stood openly and defied God and said to everyone around, "Watch this." And God reacted.
How do we know from the statement that he wasn't an Israelite? How do we know that?
Patriarchs, prophets.
Well, my statement here is God has been merciful all these years to Satan, letting him bring horrible destruction on everybody in this world. And how is that different than stoning that one man? It seemed to me if he stoned Satan, it put an end to him. It would have eliminated a lot of years of suffering.
And I imagine at this point that Satan went through the universe and said, "I told you I'm right.
Yeah. Okay.
I told you I'm right." See, but when you look at the cross of Calvary, it puts it all into perspective. Because this is what total separation of God does. It brings death.
So when you compare it to Christ and the woman taken in adultery,
what was her heart? What do you do with a man that you've done all of these things and he stands up before and says, "Watch this"?
Well, that's what the whole Israelites had done just prior to this.
That's exactly right. Whole thing had done. He's starting all over and saying, "Okay, little kids, so you got that one little kid that jumps up and is going to start the whole thing over. You have to react." This particular case, certainly, I would say.
I think also them having to stone the person was a lesson.
It's not the only time. We got Achan. We're going to go over a little bit later. We're going to find Achan. God's, you know, he goes through and he come through. Then we're going to go right through the Gospels. And what happens to Ananias and Sapphira? Same difference. Doesn't make a difference how you do it.
Well, other people aren't doing it to them.
Yeah. That's why you have to look at the whole context.
Well, and isn't there a point with the Israelites where some of the not true Jews on the outskirts of the camp were all burned up by God?
Well, there was times, a different story, yeah, the mixed multitude. I mean, God was doing everything He could to save His children. He saved two of them.
And that's why I say it was a lesson to them.
So He had a hard job. He saved two of them outside of those who died in Him.
Well, the rest of them ate all their bread and fray after that, I tell you.
So, but the interesting thing is it's in there. So, you go through the same, you got to look for that common thread. That clock's wrong. Common thread. Is God real nice, and then up at the end of time He kills the wicked? What's the difference? So you have to put that in perspective and look at it.
Verse, it says, "God slays no man."
Yeah. So, would we have felt better? Let's put it in a different perspective. Would we have felt better if we'd have hung him? Would we have felt better if we put him in an electric chair? Would we have felt better if we put a little juice in his vein?
Or even yet, would have felt better if God was touching him and died.
Pardon?
Or we would have felt better if God was just touched him and died.
Okay.
Or I
got
No matter how you kill him, he's dead.
That's my point. See?
No matter how you kill him, he's dead.
So
there is a difference if God does it and we do it.
Oh, we feel better when we do it?
No.
Pardon?
Can you imagine what it would be like to throw stones at someone until you kill them? That would change you.
That's what I was saying.
Certainly get your attention. One way or the other. You know, I cannot overemphasize this. When you are faced with truth from God, it moves you one direction or the other. You do not stand still. And when you stand up and openly defy, God knows your heart, and He knows if there's nothing that can ever change you. And this man was in that category.
Apple, you got one rotten one, you put in the middle, they all rot.
That's it.
If you don't get rid of it.
And by the way, that's why the story's there. I could have easily been hidden. You know, they could have, Moses could have said, well, I think I'll just kind of forget about putting this one in.
So. Well, you could say the effect of them stoning would create intensive fear in them.
It's a risk God will run.
Fear or reality?
See, remember one thing. This is important. At the end of time, this man was stoned. Right? What's he going to say? At the end of time, what will he say? God, you were just. God, you were fair. And you were right. Please keep that in mind. There will be no question. And he will bow down. Now, the interesting thing about sin is you would think when a person sees this and says you are right, you are God, you are just, you are merciful, and he bows down, you think it would be a change of heart. And what's the next thing he gets up and says? Let's go kill those people. God knows that we're all going to face the first death. It's the second death he works so hard for us to avoid.
So, it's our part if we go wading knee deep versus going swimming on the Sabbath, that it's our intent, or are we saying we can swim in defiance of God?
God's not interested in what you do on the Sabbath. God's interested in what is your relationship with Him.
And then that also from what he's trying to say in the healing of the woman on the Sabbath.
Absolutely. God does not keep a list of what you do on the Sabbath. He could care less. He's interested in that relationship. Because if you don't have the relationship, what happens to Sabbath-keeping people that don't have a relationship when he showed up in front of him?
They judge everybody else.
They wanted to kill him. And they did. So why would he be interested in what you do on the Sabbath? He's interested in the relationship, and then the day becomes a total different day. That's why I agree with Rob when he keeps saying, if you know me, if we have a relationship, this is what you will become. And you'll become a person that will appreciate that day that he set aside for him and family and church. But to sit here and say, you can do this, but you can't do that, or you can do this, but you can't do that, is... I mean, I remember a person in church when I was little said, Well, when I was reading the newspaper this morning, and I thought, oh my God, what a sinner. Why? Because we read the newspaper in my house after sundown.
Yeah, you couldn't open your mail either on Sabbath.
That exact point goes back. God didn't care if the guy picked up sticks or
no.
What he did.
No. When he stands up and says, I don't care, you're nothing to me, and means it, and then tries to influence others, then God will react. The same principle he reacted with the priest and the teachers of the day. They stood up and said, we are more interested in us than we are you. And he certainly reacted much different. Our time's up. Father in heaven, we're glad we live in a society where we don't have a bunch of rules, but the principle remains the same, Father. You want us to do good on the Sabbath. You want us to understand the relationship comes first, and help us never to be in a position as the Pharisees were when you healed that woman, saying, my, my, why didn't you do that Sunday through Friday? In Jesus' name, amen.